previous one, but this is something that belongs to the American people. It's the American people that need to, or in the American political landscape that needs to take action on this.
And well, Francesca Albanese, I wanted to ask you, in a few weeks, the annual meeting of the UN General Assembly will take place. Leaders from all over the world will come and give speeches to the UN General Assembly. Do you think this is a defining moment for the United Nations as an institution and its inability of the member states, or the unwillingness of the member states to stop a genocide that the entire world has been witnessing now for 2 years?
Yeah, I will take the opportunity to also answer the other part of Emmy's question, which I dropped. But it's yeah, I think that it's an historical moment, the one we live in, and it's a defining one. We will not get out of this genocide with the same pretense of innocence that we had when we entered. The crimes of Israel against the Palestinians were already 56 plus years old when the assault against Gaza on the terrible after the terrible day that October 7 was, and there is no question about that. So there had been a tolerance of Israel's impunity for decades. However, the United States is the single most important factor of crisis in the United Nations system at the moment, because the United Nations are clearly paralyzed in the face of a crisis which is political, legal, and humanitarian. And the United States have contributed to that paralysis by also, for example, what are the mechanisms to impose sanctions or to dispose of coercive or non-coercive measures against Israel with in the UN would be through the Security Council. And the United States have firmly and steadily sheltered Israel from most important instances of accountability. A rare exception is the 2016 Security Council resolution that recognized the illegality of the settlement under international law. So it's a catch-22 situation. But at the same time, I want to remind everyone that the international community is constituted by 193 member states, and the other 191 that are not part of the Gaza genocide as much as Israel and the United States should do the utmost, not only to stop the genocide, but also to salvage what remains of the multilateral system, because so far it has protected, I wouldn't say all of us, but most of us, especially in the West, and it seems that we are really giving it for granted, but we will miss human rights very much when we don't have them anymore.
Francesca Albanese, the International Criminal Court has said it deplores new U.S. sanctions on its judges and prosecutors. Last week, the U.S. State Department announced new sanctions on two judges and two prosecutors in the ICC for engaging in efforts to prosecute U.S. and Israeli citizens. The ICC statement said, "These sanctions are a flagrant attack against the independence of an impartial judicial institution which operates under the mandate from 125 state parties from all regions. They constitute also an affront against the court's state parties, the rules-based international order, and above all, millions of innocent victims across the world." I'm wondering if you can comment on this latest development, the sanctions against the ICC prosecutors and judges, and also your own situation. You are the UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, and the U.S. has sanctioned you. And if you can talk exactly about what that means.
Look, the sanctions are very heavy and frankly an awful instrument when directed at people whose job and whose efforts are in the pursuit of justice and accountability. So look at the absurdity of using an instrument which is meant to protect U.S. interests and U.S. citizens being used to punish people who are trying to stop and make account make people responsible for crimes accountable. Where is the harm to the US citizens? What is harmed, and this is why I often say these sanctions are a sign of fragility of those who use them. I mean, what's the harm that is done to the American interest other than to the illegality that is denounced? Yes, the special rapporteur has put on notice 48 businesses. And what? Why didn't they defend themselves? Why didn't they interact with me? Most of them, surely the American companies. Why did I went to complain to the American administration, who put me on notice not to continue this investigation already in May? Again, look, I come from a place which has been plagued by mafia-style logics, techniques, and I'm fully familiar with this way of behaving. And this kind of threats win only if they meet fear. But the people united must resist this. And this is why I'm not going to step back and I'm not going to stop my work.
And I wanted to ask a final question about the West Bank. As we went to air, I think something like 24 people have been injured in Ramallah in an Israeli military raid. This is not Gaza. This is Ramallah. At the same time, you have the far-right ministers talking about starting to annex the West Bank this week. What does this mean, and what role does the UN have in this?
Yes, two things. First, when we say this is not Gaza, last week, the Israeli newspaper 972 Local Call issued a report based on a leaked document by the Israeli army, which admitted that only one of six of the people killed in Gaza were Hamas combatants. And I want to underscore that Israel's definition of combatant is much broader than what is in fact afforded by international law. So it confirms and actually aggravates the accusations of the UN, independent experts and others, that the death toll has steadily been at least 70% women and children, and therefore civilians. So they are saying that in fact 80% plus of the death toll in Gaza is made of civilians. The situation is not different from the West Bank, where Israel is advancing its ethnic cleansing agenda through annexation. This is not new. In February 2023, the coalition government passed an agreement that basically transferred to Bezalel Smotrich, so the Minister of Finance, control over large swathes of the West Bank. This was yet another act of annexation, but formalizing what Israel has been doing for 57 years, creating settlements, which are a war crime in occupied territories for Israeli Jews only, that were on stolen land and were resulting in dispossession and forcible displacement of Palestinians. Of course, today this has reached abysmal proportion, because there is even that veneer of respect of international humanitarian law has gone. There are settlers and soldiers ravaging the West Bank, and the Jordan Valley is unprotected other than by a few Israeli activists who go there night and day and trying to protect shepherds and pastoralist communities. But look, the situation is abominable. And now the state of Palestine has requested an intervention from the international community. Some authorities, like the Irish president, has called for a military intervention. And I understand that everything must pass in accordance with international law through the Security Council. And at the same time, because Israel has no sovereignty whatsoever over Gaza, the West Bank and East Jerusalem, it's about time that the deployment of a protection presence is considered, because there is no other way to stop what Israel is doing.
Francesca Albanese, I want to thank you for being with us, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. We were hoping to reach a doctor at Nasser Hospital, but could not reach him today. Coming up, we go to Chicago as local and state officials push back against President Trump's threat to send in the National Guard. We'll also look at Trump's new executive orders ending so-called cashless bail. Stay with us.
Much bugging you, baby. How come you hum like you do? Why must you raise a stone and get your gruel in a stew? What's bugging you, baby? You're mean and you're quick on the bit. Don't make wind gone, maybe. Don't miss when you ought to hit. Every time I flips a dime, you start blowing your top. It must be big cause that's your wig.
The late folk singer-songwriter Michael Hurley performing What's Buggin' You, Baby? At our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in New York. Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago. President Trump signed an executive order Monday that would establish specialized National Guard units to be quickly deployed in Washington, D.C. and all 50 states. Under the order, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will oversee the National Guard assisting local law enforcement in, quote, quelling civil disturbances, unquote. The move comes weeks after Trump deployed the National Guard to Washington, where district crime rate was already at its lowest level in decades. Trump's also threatened to send troops to, New York, Baltimore, Chicago, and other cities. This is President Trump.
I made the statement that next should be Chicago, because, as you all know, Chicago is a killing field right now. And they don't acknowledge it. And they say, we don't need him. Freedom, freedom. He's a dictator. He's a dictator. A lot of people are saying maybe we like a dictator. I don't like a dictator. I'm not a dictator.
Meanwhile, Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker responded to Trump Monday at a news conference surrounded by state and local officials and business and community leaders. That's Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker speaking Monday. For more, we go to Chicago, where we're joined by Alderman Byron Sigcho-Lopez, who represents Chicago's 25th Ward. He immigrated to the U.S. from Ecuador, was first elected in 2019 as a Democratic Socialist with support from the Chicago Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. We welcome you, Alderman, to Democracy Now! You held a meeting this weekend bringing together people all over. You're chair of the Housing and Real Estate Committee. If you can talk about your response to what President Trump is threatening.
No, thank you. And it's an honor to be here with you in this critical time. When Trump talks about many people maybe like a dictator, nobody likes a dictator, and nobody wants to see the normalization of military troops in American cities. We joined the many calls of our communities to defend our city. We cannot normalize the militarization, the disappearing of our neighbors, the kidnapping of our neighbors, as we saw in June 4th here in our city, when masked men basically created a human trap and kidnapped mainly women from our community. We do not normalize, we organize. We do not despair. We're not afraid. We do not comply to dictators. And here in the city of Chicago, we done what we have done when this was first announced, the mass deportations. We organize to the frustration of the Trump Trump administration that have seen an informed, a well-organized community, and that's what they're going to continue to see. We have, if anything, as a former labor organizer, we see that the boss is our best organizer. He's uniting our city. He united our immigrant community. He's organizing and he's unifying our city now more than ever. Now we have labor leaders, faith leaders that are ready to make sure that our schools, our churches, our hospitals are safe grounds as it should be. And we want to make sure that he knows that on Labor Day, as Trump prepares to make this the last Labor Day in our city, we want to make sure that he knows that this is going to be a historic Labor Day. Faith leaders, everybody across the city coming together to defend every neighbor. Not only are Texas legislators now fleeing political violence from the Trump administration, we have many neighbors who have been kidnapped, families. We still have families, thousands of kids from the first Trump administration that is still unaccounted for. So here in Chicago, we organize. We're mobilizing labor, faith leaders, community leaders to stand for our city. We're not going to normalize a dictator. We're not going to normalize militarized zones. In a time like this, we stand up and we organize.
And Alderman, I wanted to ask you, you represent the 25th Ward, where the community of Pilsen, with the historic Mexican Latino community is centered. What is the condition on the ground right now in terms of raids in Chicago? In June, there were at least a dozen people arrested by federal immigration agents after they showed up to a routine immigration appointment at an office in the South Loop. What's the situation right now in terms of these raids?
Well, we have been one of the first communities that the Trump administration targeted. We had early on one father that was detained after his family have left the kids in school. Just at the end of last school year, ICE was setting shop right next to one of our elementary schools in a laundromat, waiting for parents at dismissal. This is intended to create terror, to scare people, to create fear, to push people to deport themselves. So we see also with now that they not only don't respect rights, they're using violence as a tool of fascism. They did not respect constitutional rights when they enter one of our businesses a few months ago and detained two workers. In our community, right now, there's serious concerns and fear of the Trump administration coming and snatching families, snatching or being around schools, around hospitals, churches. So in our community, we're organizing. We are making sure that we denounce the Trump administration for coming to churches, hospitals, schools. We're preparing. We're working together with all community leaders, as we did when the administration threatened with mass deportations. We organize, and we're organizing with labor leaders to make sure that our labor leaders, elected leaders, faith leaders, our community at the front lines, that we keep our vulnerable communities safe in safe spaces, and that we come heavy with a mass mobilization on Labor Day on September 1st, led by the Chicago Teachers Union and many other leaders, to make sure that the Trump administration will see dignity. Our solidarity to L.A., our solidarity to D.C., we see what's happening. We need to make sure that there's more coverage of that. We invite all the media to come to Chicago. We are organizing to protect our communities. We are prepared to mobilize, as we did, not only to organize about knowing our rights. It's clear that the Trump administration does not respect our constitution on our rights. So we want to make sure that we are organized to protect our people and go in the offense. We need to hold them accountable for the people who are dying in ICE facilities, for the concentration camps illegally built, and also for the kids that are being separated, for the multiple atrocities. We are prepared here in Chicago. We are a strong labor city. We're not going to normalize fascism, and we are prepared to face the dictator head on, and we know that we can defeat Project 2025 and the dictator that want to consolidate power.
And Alderman, I want to ask you, you're a close ally of Mayor Brandon Johnson. Your discussions with the mayor in terms of how he's going to respond if Trump sends the National Guard in, especially the issue of how will the Chicago police respond?
Yes, we have been in close communication with Mayor Johnson, just as we did when we launched a huge Know Your Rights campaign to make sure that the mayor knows that it's critical that the city of Chicago stand strong. And he today will be joining us on an announcement to have a major mobilization for Labor Day. We also have talked about the importance of making sure that there's no collaboration between the Chicago Police Department and the Trump administration. We have seen that on June 4th. There was an investigation, multiple leaders and elected officials that condemned the actions of ICE and any kind of collaboration on June 4th, the incident that you mentioned. And the mayor has shown his support for our community, his standing is strong. He went to Washington to defend our constitution, our state, and city code. And we are here prepared to mobilize on Labor Day, Mayor Johnson being one of the people standing with us. There will be no collaboration with the Chicago Police Department and ICE agents. And that's what we suspect, that the Trump administration is deploying military forces, because they know that there's no way that they can conduct such operations again without the collaboration of the Chicago Police Department. In this case, he wants to send the military. We will continue to push back. We will continue to make sure that there's no collaboration with Chicago Police Department. But more than anything else, we want to make sure that there's massive mobilization in our city to make sure that we protect each other, protect our neighbors. I'm glad that Mayor Johnson is joining today the launching of the Labor Day movement to protect our city. Chicago is a labor city, is a labor town, and we're going to join LA and DC fighting fascism. And we know that we're going to defeat Project 2025 here in Chicago. We're ready, as my sister Stacey Davis-Gates said, for a third attempt to reconstruct and rebuild our country. Americans are courageous. Americans will not stand for kings or dictators. And here in Chicago, we will show the power of the labor movement, along with faith leaders and our immigrant communities together. The dictator has unified our city, and we're ready to take on this, because we must defeat fascism. Chairman Fred Hampton said it clearly and well. If we did not defeat fascism, fascism will stop every single one of us. So here in Chicago, in the land of Chairman Fred Hampton, in the land of the labor movement, we said to Trump, we're not afraid, we're not going to be intimidated, and we will not comply with a dictator.
We're speaking to Alderperson Byron Sicho Lopez, speaking to us from Chicago. I want to bring into this conversation another Chicago guest. Two other executive orders President Trump signed Monday, which are drawing nationwide backlash. They aim to eliminate so-called cashless bail and threaten to cut federal funding to D.C. and other jurisdictions that keep the policy in place. Cashless bail is a system in which people accused of minor offenses are released from jail while awaiting trial without having to pay a specific cash amount. This is President Trump.
Cashless bail. They thought it was discriminatory to make people put up money because they just killed three people lying on a street. Any street all over the country, cashless bail. We're ending it.
So 2 years ago, Illinois became the first state to eliminate cash bail. For more, we're joined in Chicago by Sharon Mitchell Jr. He leads the Cook County Public Defender's Office, was part of a coalition that supported the bill to remove money from the bail process in Illinois. Welcome to Democracy Now, Mr. Mitchell. I'm wondering if you can start off by explaining what cashless bail is. I know you don't even like that term, but explain the significance of President Trump's attack, not only on Illinois, but around the country.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a true fan of the show, and it's great to be here. Listen, this is tyranny. This is what kings do. A duly elected state legislator passed a criminal justice reform package to improve the quality of bail decisions in 2021. It was put in play in 2023, and despite predictions from the right, the bail system did not fail, crime did not explode. And Trump has decided that he doesn't like the policy, not because of the facts or the data, but because of the politics. So he literally issues an executive order that threatens to starve the state. Republicans, Democrats, poor people, black people, brown people, Asian people, white people, all people, until the duly elected legislator bends to his will, not because they agreed with him, but because they decide to bend to his threat. Your last guest talked about mafia-style threats. Amy, this ain't different. What this reform is when somebody goes before a judge after they've been accused of an offense, that we're not using money to make the determination about whether that person remains in jail now. The old system was broken, and people on both sides of the aisle really hated it. There were people that felt that people who were accused of crimes could buy their way out of jail despite their risk of harm or threats to leave the jurisdiction. And there were people that looked at the jail population and said, these people remain in jail because of their lack of ability, their inability to pay bail amounts, not because of some finding by a judge. The old system was a disaster, and you saw predictions that these changes could blow up the system or explode crime, and it didn't. The system is working. It's been working since September of 2023. But despite all that, despite the duly elected legislator coming up with a reform, an entire reform package, it being taking 2 years to put into place, then actually put it in place, Trump has decided to resort to mafia-style tactics. And it's another move in a long line of policies that are intended to destabilize the efforts to reduce crime in this city.
But Trump is threatening to do what? He's going to withhold federal funds from local jurisdictions that that remove money from the bail process. Is there any way to stop this, or is it even legal?
I'm a lawyer. I would tell you lots of legal arguments. I'm not sure the law matters anymore, right? My hope is that. Well, this is what I know. I know that there'll be lots of resistance. I know that there is a commitment to this policy because the policy works. It isn't perfect, but no judge has been given a crystal ball. These are difficult decisions. But the old decision, the old process was awful. We had hearings that last 37 seconds, and then judges would come up with a number out of thin air, and the decision about whether somebody was released was based upon whether they had a rich grandma or a rich aunt or a girlfriend who was willing to put up the money. And women, mainly black and brown women, had to make the decision about whether they were going to pay the rent or they're going to buy their loved ones freedom. So I know there is lots of energy in this community, in this city, in this region, in this county, in this state to protect these reforms. And I know there are going to be thousands of people out there trying to protect them.
And we only have about a minute or so left, but didn't the Illinois Supreme Court already ruled in favor of this legislation?
Absolutely. The legislation was passed in 2021. There was an intentional two-year wrapping up period because it is a significant change. At the last second, there was essentially an injunction filed. It went through the process from January of 2023 to September of 2023. The Illinois Supreme Court found it to be constitutional, and we have 2 years essentially of success of this policy. Yet and still, Trump is paying politics, not caring about the people of Cook County, Chicago. And again, it's another step in destabilizing the city. We've seen community violence intervention dollars, things that help drop the murder rate, being stripped away, defunded from our communities. And this will also hurt communities, as we know that jail, especially inappropriate jail, reduces the criminological factors or increases the criminological factors that bring people back into the criminal legal system. People can't get jobs, people can't get education, and they resort to things that we don't like because the system intentionally starves them of the resources they need to contribute to our communities.
Sharon, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to look at this story. Sharon Mitchell, Jr., Chief Cook County Public Defender, part of the coalition that helped support the bill to remove money from the bail process. Thanks also to Chicago Alderperson Byron Sigcho Lopez, Alderperson of the 25th Ward in Chicago and Chair of the Housing and Real Estate Committee of the Chicago City Council. We will continue to follow these stories and what happens on Labor Day. This is Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaru Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, and Safwat Nizal. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you for tuning in to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.